Chapter 28. It's nearing the end of January, and Bob and I are back in Miss Gavin's first grade classroom. But this time she's provided us with adult-sized chairs, and my shoes are arguably as ugly as hers. The school year at Wellmont Elementary is divided into thirds, and we're about halfway through the second third. Miss Gavin asked to meet with us to discuss Charlie's progress before the next report cards go home. We sit down, and Bob reaches over and takes hold of my left hand. Miss Gavin acknowledges us before she begins with a kind smile, probably interpreting our hand-holding, embracing for the impact of discouraging news, a sweet offering of emotional support. While I detect an element of anxious solidarity in Bob's touch, I think the primary reason he's holding my hand is to keep it still. Most of the time, my left arm dangles straight down from my shoulder, useless but not calling attention to itself either. But recently, my left hand has started showing an interest in conversation, and unbeknownst to me, it gestures. My outpatient therapists, Heidi, my mother, and Bob all think this is a good development, a positive sign of life returning to my left side. And I agree, but to me, it's also a freaky new symptom because it feels like someone other than me is the puppeteer. Sometimes the gestures are small expressions that add appropriate emphasis to whatever I'm saying. But other times, the movements are completely disconnected from insightful content, and my arm just seems to aimlessly, even spastically, roam around. Yesterday, during a shamefully passionate discussion about Kate plus 8 with my mother, my left hand wandered onto my left boob and stayed there. And I only know this now because long, eye-watering laugh at my expense, my mother let me in on the big joke and removed my hand from my boob for me, since I couldn't let go of it of my own volition. So Bob might be holding my hand in loving support, but he's probably more concerned with keeping me from feeling myself up in front of Miss Gavin. For either reason, I'm grateful. "We're all so glad you're back home, Mrs. Nickerson," says Miss Gavin. Thank you. "How are you doing?"
Good.
"Good. I was so worried when I heard what happened. And with you not being home for so long, I was also all behind." I nod and wait for her to elaborate on the itemized details of his acting out, and the significant extent of his slippage. Bob squeezes my hand. He's waiting too. But he's been doing really well. Does better in the mirror after he takes it in the mornings and tapers off as the day goes on. Or it could be that he's more tired by the afternoon. But overall, I can definitely see an improvement.
Wah.
I was hoping all along to hope it aloud. He's so much better at home, finishing his homework in less than an hour and without major negotiations or drama, remembering to put his shoes on if I ask him to put his shoes on, not losing more than half his marbles in a day. But we didn't know if any of these behavioral improvements at home were translating to the classroom. Bob gives my hand a happy shake, and we wait for Miss Gavin to elaborate on the details and extent of Charlie's improvement. He's been doing better at following instructions, and he's more often than not able to finish the worksheets I give to the class. She hands Bob a stack of white papers. Still holding on to my left hand, Bob passes me one sheet at a time. Each paper has Charlie's name at the top, printed in his penciled handwriting. On most of the sheets, Charlie has answered all of the questions, which in and of itself is a noteworthy achievement. And so far, I see only one or two or three wrong out of 10 or so questions on each page. "Great job! Well done! Good work!" are written in red marker at the top of almost every sheet. Extra exclamation points and smiley faces added to many. I don't think I've ever seen celebration on Charlie's work before. "Here's the last one," says Bob. "It's a sheet of simple math problems. 100% is written and circled at the top, a perfect score for my beautifully imperfect boy." "Can we take these home?" I ask, beaming.
"Of course," says Miss Gavin, beaming back.
I can't wait to gush over this particular page of addition and subtraction with my mother, who will be equally thrilled, and to magnetize it to the center of the fridge. Or maybe we should frame it and hang it on the dining room wall. "It's a huge improvement, don't you think?" asks Miss Gavin. "Night and day," says Bob. I let him use an extra large yellow index card to block out the questions below the ones he's focusing on, Cutting the questions into individual strips was too time-consuming, and the other kids got interested in his craft project, and suddenly everyone wanted to cut up their papers too. So I don't mind if you do that at home, but we'll use the yellow index card here, and it seems to work well. Okay, that would be easier for us too. Does he sit or stand? I ask. I've told him he can do whatever he prefers, and he used to mostly stand, but now he's back to sitting. I do think standing helps him stay still and focused on what he's doing, but some of the other kids were giving him a hard time about it. Some of the boys have been teasing him. Who? Who is giving him a hard time? Give me names. I want names. Like how? Bob asks. Well, when he was standing, someone was sliding his chair back so that when he went to sit back down, he'd fall on the floor. One day, one of them put a chocolate cupcake from Snack on Charlie's chair, and after he finished his work, he sat on it. They teased him, saying the chocolate was poop. They called him Poopy Pants. I feel like Miss Gavin just kicked me in the chest with her ugly shoe. My poor Charlie. I look past Miss Gavin and notice the poster board of Stellar Spellers. Charlie's picture has been added to the cast of characters. His eyes are squeezed shut from an exaggerated smile. There are four other photos of boys on the board. They're also smiling. A minute ago, I would have said they were all cute little boys, but now I see a gang of rotten little monsters, bad seeds. Why hasn't Charlie said anything about this to us? What have you done about it? Asked Bob. I reprimand the kids who are teasing him when I'm aware of it, but I'm sure a good deal of it goes on underneath my radar, and unfortunately, the punishments do seem to spur the boys on even more. I can imagine it. Verbal warnings, no recess, or being sent to the principal's office are only going to stoke the fire. But surely there's got to be something we can do. Implausible revenge fantasies start playing out in my mind. An eye for an eye, poop for poop. I squeeze my impotent anger into the handle of my granny cane. Caning would work for me. So what then? Charlie just has to suffer through it? Bob asks. What about moving the kids who are bothering him to a different part of the room? I did that, so he would be able to stand now if he wants to without anyone disturbing him, but he's been choosing to stay in his seat while he works. I think he just wants to be like everyone else. I know how he feels. I know you're not supposed to use this word in today's politically correct world, but do you think he'll ever be normal? I ask. My heart winces. I know I'm asking about Charlie, but I feel my own question as if I were asking it about me. Will I ever be normal? Will I ever see 100% at the top of my sheet? Miss Gavin pauses, and I can see her choosing her words carefully before she opens her mouth. I know her answer is simply going to be one young teacher's opinion about one young student based on a very limited amount of experience with him. But my heart, impermeable to this logic, feels that somehow the truth of both Charlie's and my fates will rest in what she's about to say, like she's about to deliver my prophecy. I clutch my cane. I think between the medication, behavioral, and dietary adjustments like the ones you've been making, and all the positive reinforcement and support he's getting, Charlie's ADHD won't get in the way of him reaching his full academic potential. I really do applaud you both for taking such quick action. A lot of parents would have ignored me or blamed me and the school system for ages before doing what you did to help him. Thank you. That's such a big relief to hear, says Bob. But what about the other normal kid stuff, like fitting in? She hesitates.